Okay, so I'm Jonathan Yip, and today we're going to be talking about programming for the iPhone. You may have heard of it, it's pretty popular. Today we're just going to talk about sort of the basics of iPhone programming. There's a lot of stuff to sort of discover and learn about. Last year I tried to design an iPhone program for my final project also, and there's just sort of a lot of sort of concepts I wasn't familiar with, vocab that I had to learn, and that sort of caused me a lot of frustration. So I'm hoping that today we can sort of go through some of the new concepts that you're going to need to jump into iPhone programming and not get totally tripped up, which is sort of what happened to me, and it's no fun. So today we're just going to go through a little bit of the programming language that the iPhone SDK, Software Development Kit, uses. It's called Objective-C. We're going to talk about object-oriented programming, which is sort of a new paradigm of programming that you may not be used to. And we should talk about a lot of the words that show up in Apple's documentation and a lot of their sample code so that you can have some familiarity with that as you try and learn to write iPhone programs. That's what I'm going to cover. And then Winston, afterwards, will talk about tips and tricks that he learned while writing Rover, the unofficial guide to Harvard for iPhone. And he'll talk a little bit more about Xcode. So this is a largely theoretical and conceptual side. So the iPhone. It runs sort of a pared-down version of Mac OS X. And the big pulling point of the iPhone is the App Store, obviously. You've all heard of it. Lots of people have made lots of money through it. It's hugely successful. And that's where a lot of the allure comes from. The iPhone, though, is sort of a different device than we're used to. We're used to programming on desktops. There's huge amounts of memory. There's a lot of screen real estate. We can run multiple programs at the same time. The iPhone's totally different. Though, yes, it's more powerful than the computer that someone might have used 10 years ago, it's still not as powerful as this MacBook Pro. So there are sort of some design considerations that you have to think about when you're trying to envision the program that you want to design. Is it something that someone's going to want to look at on the go? Is it something that's worthwhile to someone who's sort of moving through across campus or traveling? Certainly, no one's going to write, the great American novel on their iPhone. So you have to sort of target specifically what it is you're trying to do on the iPhone. Remember also that the iPhone can only run one application at a time. It can only display one window. So none of this like formatting palettes that you see in Microsoft Word. And so the way that Apple has allowed us to write iPhone applications is through the Apple SDK, that is Software Development Kit. It's called Xcode, and it is, in fact, an IDE, an integrated development environment. What that basically means is this big piece of software. It's very helpful. It includes a space for you to write your code, to debug your code, to compile your code. It's just an all-in-one place for you to go to write all your iPhone code. It's really helpful. It has lots of documentation, and it's just a well-written program. You'll find it lots of fun to use, actually. And then CS50 itself and the School of Engineering here at Harvard have some more resources. Normally, to get access to Xcode and sort of the Apple App Store, you would have to pay for an account with Apple for $99. SEAS already has one. So if you want access to that, you can just email sysadmins@cs50.net. Also, if you don't have a Mac, you do need a Leopard Intel Mac to run the SDK. But if you do have a Windows PC, we do have some computers available, if you're interested, that you can use and install the SDK on. So don't let that be a deterrent for you. So the way that iPhone programs are written sort of requires us to sort of shift our thinking a little bit about how we think about the code that we write. Fundamentally, we've been learning about procedural programming. And there's the way that Objective-C works is that it's object-oriented. And this has to do with the fundamentals, with the division between data and data operations. In C, we've largely been thinking about data. It's static. It's a bunch of bits. And we have functions that operate on data. And there's sort of a distinction there that we haven't really combined in C. But in object-oriented programming, we're going to meld those two together. And what this is sort of it's a shift in abstraction. Subtraction was the idea that implementation didn't really matter to us. All that mattered to us was the interface that we had. And a great sort of example of abstraction is the steering wheel. So you turn the steering wheel left, your wheels turn left. Turn the steering wheel right, your wheels turn right. What's not important to us is what happens between the steering wheel and the wheels. We don't care about what happens in the drive shaft, in the limited slip differential. None of that matters because of the abstraction that we have. We just know that you turn it left, the wheels go left. And so that's what C allowed us to do sort of with functions. We would pass in arguments, it would do something, and then would give us back a return value. With object-oriented programming, we're going to move up one level in abstraction. There's going to be a new sort of way to think about data and data operations. So in C, we had functions and we had our data in the form of structs, data structures, and things like that. But with objects, we're going to sort of combine those. We're going to hide the data structure that is sitting behind our data. We're only going to be able to access it through our functions. And so this is the idea of an object, where we combine the state of an object with its behavior. It's kind of like in real life. If we look at a watch, it's a great object. You have the display of the data on the watch face. It tells you what time it is. And there's also that dial on the side of the watch, which lets you change the time. So the time itself is actually stored inside the watch in these gears, right? But we really never access the gears. We never touch the gears to change them. All we know is that we can see what time it is, and we know how to change the time. So in that sense, if you look at that little diagram at the bottom, what we have is we have data encapsulated by methods, which is sort of a synonym, more or less, for functions. So this watch, object metaphor, allows us to think of our programming in a more sort of lifelike way. Basically, if you want to think about it this way, you can think about it like a struct in C. But instead of just having variables inside your struct, you also have functions. And it's just a big wrapper for data and your functions. And just a little change in terminology, we're going to call functions that are involved with our objects methods. And we're going to call the data inside instance variables. Or at least that's the way that Apple's going to refer to them in all of its documentation. So to sort of think more about objects, pretend that this faucet, we can imagine this faucet as an object that we're going to implement in our programming. And so fundamentally, we're going to have two different types of we have data, and we're going to have our functions, our methods. And so kind of the methods that we would want to think about are starting the faucet, stopping the faucet, having the faucet report to us how much water it's using. It's a really advanced faucet. To set the water pressure that's coming through the faucet. And so those are the functions, the operations we can do on our object. On the other hand, we also have the data of our faucet. Is the tap open? The actual amount, the value of the water usage. And it can store, for example, like where its water is coming from. And so you can see how there's a sort of combination of state and behavior. The methods are the behavior of the faucet, and the instance variables are the state of the objects. And so we're going to use the behavior to alter the state. No longer do we have access to the underlying instance variables. Everything's going to go through our methods. You can see that there's a distinction between reporting water usage, which is a function, a method, and the actual water usage of the faucet, which is a piece of data. Does that make sense? Cool. So there's some more concepts that we're going to have to talk about so that we can sort of understand how iPhone applications come together. Some more object-oriented concepts, there's this idea of inheritance. So classes in Objective-C are sort of templates for creating objects. You can think of them, in our example with the faucet, as sort of a faucet mold. It's a way to make more faucets. So a class is a template to make a particular type of object. But what happens then if we have our faucet from before, but we decide suddenly that, you know, circular faucets are terribly out of style, and we want rectangular faucets because they're more modern. We don't want to reinvent the faucet. We just want to change the details of the faucet slightly. We still want it to have, you know, the on-off knob. We still want it to accept a certain amount of water from a certain source. We just want to change its shape. And so what we can do then in the idea of object-oriented programming is to subclass a class. That is to make sort of a copy of this template and change the template slightly. What that subclass does is it inherits all the features of its superclass. So the superclass is on top, and the subclass is the one that inherits. So if we were to make our square faucet mold, that would be our subclassing of the original faucet mold. And we would it would inherit all the other features of this the circular faucet. It would inherit the on-off knob and the pipe interface from the old faucet. But we just tweaked it slightly. And so that's the idea of inheritance, that it's inheriting features from its parent class. We're just changing templates a little bit. Then when we actually have our program, we're going to create a whole bunch of objects, whether they be buttons or text fields or anything like that. How they're going to communicate is through messaging. Each object is going to call another object by accessing its methods, that is, its functions. So we had these little function method object diagrams here. We have little encapsulated objects. And these arrows indicate that they're sending one another messages. And they do that by calling their methods, that is, by calling their functions. And so that's how they interact. For example, if we had a button that changed a text field or that resized an image, that button would be calling the image's method to resize. It'd be like, hit the button, button calls method from the image, resize by 50%. And so they send each other messages. And so all this comes together in Apple's programming language called Objective-C. It's technically a variation on C. C code that you write can be included in Objective-C, but it does have a totally different syntax, which you'll be happy to hear. Doesn't really look too much like C, but you can see underlying familiarity. There are some of the same conventions, too. In your SDK, you'll see that there are going to be .h files and .m files. That corresponds neatly with our headers and our actual C files, where .h is sort of the prototyping of functions. You declare variables for the first time, whereas the m file is actually the implementation of your code, where you implement your functions and you write out the body of your code. In this case, we have a declaration of a class. So you remember that a class is a template to create objects. You can see some things might be familiar. You see string, you see int. I won't go too much into the syntax of Objective-C because all of this is can be found on Apple's website in an easy-to-understand way. But just you can see that these are methods. They're our functions. They're inside our class. Here we have instance variables. And those together create one of our objects. Does that all make sense? Awesome. So we have here an example of a method declaration. You can see that there's a return type, like we had in C. You can see that there are arguments, which they call parameters, just sort of shift in vocabulary. The parameters have types, just like our arguments had types. Were they ints? Were they strings? And then, of course, the arguments have names. So it's similar, slightly different, not too different, though. Down here at the bottom, we have an actual method that we're calling. But the thing is that we're calling it from an object. That's the big difference. There are no sort of functions floating around that we can just call. We're always going to have to access functions via an object. Because remember, the way we're thinking about programming now is that objects encapsulate both functions and data. when we design iPhone programs, there's sort of a fundamental design pattern that Apple wants us to use. It's a good one because it makes lots of sense, and it lets us reuse more code and make our code clearer for people to read and debug. It's called a model view controller design pattern. It basically splits up our code into three different silos. The model is the actual data. It's our database. It's where, for example, our SQL database, where the data is actually stored. We have our view, which is the interface. That is, when you actually turn on your iPhone and you open up an app, it's that user interface that you see. There are buttons, there are links, et cetera. But these two are just totally different. They don't really, there's no reference to the data inside the view, and the data has no reference to the interface. We definitely don't want to be implementing our interface in the data, and we don't want to be storing our data in the interface. So how do these two interact? How do we actually combine them? Well, we have our controller, which is sort of the bridge between our model and our view. It pulls our data into the interface and tells the interface how to display this data that we have. This should always just kind of be sitting in the back of your mind. It won't be necessarily explicit when you're using Xcode, but it is the way that Apple divides your code. And you'll sort of see that as you play around with the interface builder, which corresponds with the view. And you'll see it when you see objects like controllers, and of course with your underlying data. Any questions about the model view controller? It's just sort of a way to think about how we write our programs. Great. Delegation. This is the word you're going to hear a lot as you try and create applications. It might be a little confusing at first, but just understand the big concept here. When we have big objects, for example, our application, the whole application is actually just going to be one big object at first. And the thing is that since it's so big and unwieldy, we don't want to create a subclass of our application. We don't want to try and create a copy of it so that we can change things in the application, because that's just not efficient. Instead, the system that we have in the SDK is this thing called delegation. We basically have an object that's very similar to our application objects, but it basically acts on behalf of our application. It is literally a delegate. It represents our bigger objects. So anything that we want to change in our UI application object, which may sound bizarre at first, or totally incomprehensible, but it'll make more sense as you wade through Apple's documentation. Just keep in mind that it's going to be delegated. We're going to be working with an object that works on the UI application object's behalf. Properties. So you're going to see these two a lot. It took me the longest time when I was trying to do my final project to figure out what these things meant. I looked at Apple's documentation. It kind of made sense, but it didn't really. I was totally confused, and I just spent hours trying to figure out what these were. You will definitely see these. What they do is that they create these things called getter and setter methods. Remember that in our objects, there's no way for us to actually access the underlying instance variables, the data. The only way we can access them is through a function. So in C, we could actually take our ints and change our ints. We just reassign it a different value. In object-oriented programming, we actually need a function to change the data because we need a data operation to act on our data. And so in the past, with Apple, you had to create these functions yourself. You had to make little methods that said, like call it set foo, that would let you access this variable called foo and change it. Or you have to write a function called get foo that would give you the value of foo. That was just a big pain, so Apple developed these ways to make it easier for you to make these getter and setter methods. The getter method gets you the data, and the setter method, it's hard to say, the setter method lets you set the underlying instance variable. So whenever you start declaring instance variables, you might see these words attached to them. Add property and add synthesize just tell the SDK to create these getter and setter methods for you. So it saves you the effort of having to write your own functions to access your own data. It's just a neat shortcut that Apple's implemented in the SDK. So when you do run across those, they're not a big deal. Whenever you create variables, you're probably going to want to use them because it'll make your life easier. But it's not fundamentally changing the way your program is going to work. So don't get intimidated by at property, at synthesize. They sound fancy, but they actually don't do too much. At property just goes into your headers, and at synthesize goes into the implementation itself. And then you'll see these words, which also cause me a lot of trouble, non-atomic and retain. You'll see these often in sample code when they declare variables. What they mean, non-atomic, simply means that we don't need to be able to multi-thread our variable. We don't need to be able to parallel process with our variable. Because on the iPhone, most of the time, we just can't do that. And though there's not a lot of overhead from allowing for multi-threading, we just don't want to deal with it when we're programming for the iPhone. So just scrap all that code that we need for multi-threading by using this little word, non-atomic. And then retain, what it does is it basically says to the program, listen, I'm using this variable. Please don't delete it. The program with Objective-C sometimes takes liberties with your variables. When it thinks that you're done with them, it might decide to get rid of them. So retain basically says, do not touch my variables until I give you explicit permission to remove that memory. Basically, you'll see these with instance variables. Just use them. It's sort of convention for the iPhone, because Objective-C is also used to make Mac programs. So it's foreseeable that if you were to design a Mac program, you might want to use, say, Atomic. But in our case, we're never going to use that. So just remember that that's what these two things do. So that's sort of a broad overview of iPhone vocabulary, of concepts you'll have to understand to create your programs. There are a whole lot of resources that Apple has for you to dig deeper. The sort of holy grail of these documents is the iPhone Application Programming Guide. It's super comprehensive, which I actually mean it's really too long. It's 194 pages. It's extremely detailed. It will tell you how to do everything, but chances are you're not going to want to read it. In which case, I encourage you to look at the developer forums, look at sample code. There's a lot of sample code on Apple's website. It lets you see how people implement a button or implement a search bar. And that will lead you along the way to implementing your own search bar. In learning Objective-C, there are these two good documents on the website. I'd stick with learning Objective-C A Primer, because it's about 100 pages shorter than object-oriented programming with C. And finally, when you actually use Xcode, there's a really neat feature where you can hold down Option and double-click any word in your program, and documentation will pop up telling you what that function does or what that word means. It's kind of like the man page in Unix. Does anyone have any questions on the concepts that I went over just now? If not, Winston, it's all yours.
So thanks very much for coming out here. Jonathan just gave a really good overview of the abstract parts of object-oriented programming, Objective-C, as well as this like model view controller hierarchy. And I think what I'll try to do is to go a little bit more into the code. I've been working on a program for Rover, which some of you might have from your iPhones. And I was in the exact same shoes as you last year. Like, well, maybe arguably you guys probably knew more than me in terms of programming. Who knows? But really, it's like a bit of a steep learning curve going from like C and maybe like JavaScript as you're doing it this week to object-oriented programming with Objective-C. Like, for example, you might have a question like this model view controller thing. It sounds like a great idea. How do you actually implement it? Like, what things do you type in to actually have it work, right? So all of these are questions which it's actually really hard to address in a presentation. And like, I don't want to stand up here typing code into and showing you what's going on. And so I want this to be dynamic. Like, you guys should talk to me. I'll be here the rest of the semester, and like, until I graduate. Just like if you guys have questions and stuff, email me or just post to the bulletin board. I'll be trolling there, looking for your questions and such. But really, it's hard to code on the board. It's hard to have you guys listen when we code. So I'll go through some concepts. I'll try to show you some tricks that I've learned. But the gist of it is that come talk to me, come talk to us, and we'll be sending out these slides on Sunday or Monday. But basically, when you're starting iPhone programming, so you can look through all of these. We'll be sending out these slides with even more things, like the text of what I'm saying added in, so that it'll become more clear. Okay. So the first question now is, back to Jonathan's question of design, is what kind of application do you want to write? Do you want to write something that's a game? In that case, I can't really help you because Rover actually has not much in there with OpenGL. It doesn't have quartz or core animation built in. It's more of a data program. So in terms of game applications, you might be a bit on your own. But just show of hands, who's thinking of doing something with data? Nice. That's really good. Because with data stuff, I can tell you all about view controllers, table views, these navigation stuff. Basically, we program in Rover. And so data applications, you'll do a lot of these drilling down into different layers of data. You have your shuttle schedule, and then the next part is what times the shuttle arrive at, or you can have a map in the next layer. So I'll be going down a little deeper into those. And so again, still need an idea. I guess most of you seem to already have your idea, but just first of all, make an application that solves a problem that's for yourself. Don't think about, oh my God, this is going to make me $1 million, and therefore I'm going to make something that's targeted towards this audience in particular. Because you won't really know what's going on, to be honest. And the best thing is just to make something that you use yourself. Furthermore, what makes it need to be in an iPhone? Why can't you program something on a web interface? If you're doing a course shopping guide, it might be cool to interface the iPhone and the web part together, because you might want to do the shopping tool. You have your partner, for example, your one or two partners, they program this web shopping tool and they push it out to an iPhone in terms of an XML, it just pushes to an XML page which that iPhone application then reads, so you have a shopping schedule that goes with you, right? That's you don't necessarily want to have a full core shopping list on your iPhone. At least I don't think so. So think about what parts of it need to be on an iPhone and what parts of it can interface with something else. Furthermore, can this link with something that's web-based as well? One of the ideas that I just kind of came up in the last 15 minutes, what if you had something that tracks your exercise stats as you went to the gym and stuff? Well, if you track your exercise stats, why have that only be on the iPhone? Wouldn't you want something that's like a web interface as well to make this whole experience richer, so that you have a graph that's on your computer of the stats, but then you can also carry it on your mobile phone? So these are all sort of features that you should think about to go for more depth rather than breadth. Don't just say, oh, I'll make a gym tracker, I'll also put in library hours and shuttle schedules and things. Go for a deep, consolidated application with a very focused user base. Because, not focused so much that it's really only you using it, but it solves a problem that you have, and most likely it'll solve a problem that someone else has too. And then also, can you build a community of users? With this gym application, maybe you want to use Facebook Connect, which is a way to interface with your Facebook friends to share how many, dude, I lifted, I benched 250 last week. How about you, right? If you build that community of users, your application sort of instantly becomes more powerful, because it's just whoa, you're connected into this big network of your friends, and Facebook Connect is a great API because that's literally just your friends when you log in. So it's cool to build a community of users. Another interesting thing is just reading, I don't know if you guys heard of an application called Ocarina. So Ocarina is sort of you take your iPhone out, you can play essentially Zelda's Ocarina or something like that. And it's pretty cool because not only can you just take out something like this and just blow into the microphone and press around like that, it'll make noises and it'll sound good. But what's really compelling about it is that you can press a button that allows you to broadcast your playing to anyone else that's in on the Ocarina network. And you can also listen to other people playing at the same time. So that's just think about that. It's a really neat social feature that you can build in. And that's what makes your application not able to be replicated. Because if you have this huge network of users, that means that the next person who wants to create Ocarina 2 isn't just going to step in and just reverse engineer your code and make something great. So keep all these in mind as you're designing your projects. And again, over the past year, we've just had the Rover team, Rover here, we've had tons of discussions of what features to build in and such. And we've read lots. So come talk to us. All right, so now getting into a bit of the nitty-gritty in terms of coding. What you'll be doing is actually coding in subclasses. it's very different from the C that you've worked on for most of the semester, where you have this like int argv, like int main, like argv, argc, that type of thing, where you declare it and then you have stuff on the command line. Because as you might find out, when you write an application with the iPhone, you're not doing anything with a command line. Or like there's not a command line that pops up and you type in like, you know, like foo and like something like that. So instead what you're doing is really taking, like, here's this huge iceberg that like Apple has built for you. It's like Apple, the whole SDK is this, the meaty part of the iceberg. And you're really touching the top of it, where you're subclassing a lot of the things that they give you. So you're subclassing, their view controllers. Like you're taking this base template that they give you, which Jonathan talked about, right, the classes, and you're taking that to the next step by adding in your own methods on top of that. So a lot of times what our whole job of iPhone programming is adding in these extra methods that add functionality to your program. Like these methods can be, you know, some sort of thing that converts like feet to inches or like feet to centimeters. Let's be more interesting. So these methods are really your job as a programmer, and you want to package them in methods. You want to start thinking in methods. You don't want to have giant global variables floating around. You really want to think about passing things around, and that's, you know, that's a really important part. So I'm not sure whether this is the right time to go into the syntax or not, but why not? So I'll just pull up the maybe some rando version of the Rover code, and then we can. Wow, that's an error that we have. And you can just look at what subclassing actually means. So I can just go into any of these like view controllers. And if we go into the subclassing really occurs in this header file, where we have this program thing here called, oh, I have a cursor. So we have this thing here called search view controller, right? And search view controller is what my class is called. But in order to subclass it, what I do is I put this like colon here. And this colon here afterwards means that it's a subclass of this general thing that Apple has given me called UI table view controller. So that means that literally all the methods that are in UI table view controller are now mine. So that I can either, if I want to modify them, I can literally just type in the same. So I actually pull up a program that started from scratch. So we can look at this here, and we can see that if we go into root view controller, which is like the base view, it'll be a subclass of this table view controller here. And then from there, inside the table view controller, there are a lot of like methods that you see. And so these methods, you're actually going to overwrite. So every if you want to add to the method that's of the super class, you call this super, because super is also like a class definition, and super view did unload, because the, let me structure it this way. This is, up here is this UI table view controller, right? Inside UI table view controller, there's a view did load already. So when you subclass it, like Jonathan said, you make this template, you copy it into the new thing. So now there's like a UI table view controller of yours, but it's called, I think, root view controller. And within that, there's this view did load as well. So if you, right now it's commented out. If you were just to uncomment that, and just like take out that super view did load, you'd literally be overwriting code that's in the super class, because this is now your copy of it, and you're just, you know, writing your own code on top of that. But if you do the super view did unload thing, you actually call up to the top, because remember, super is still like a designation for where this like the it's a pointer essentially to the parent class. And after that, it calls the view did unload within the parent class, runs that, and then it goes to the next line. Wow. It goes to the next line, and the next line is indeed the stuff that your code starts. So sort of jumped a little bit into syntax there. It won't be any questions? Just like sort of with this subclassing and such. Like this is what John actually meant by subclassing. Like you were literally just putting that colon there, and it's a subclass of this like Apple method. You'll play around with lots of it. Chances are in the beginning you'll probably be just subclassing a lot of Apple's own methods, and I'll get to a lot of the vocabulary behind that later of what these view controllers actually are. And but you can also create your own methods, and I'll actually talk about that next. So okay. So this MVC architecture, the model view controller architecture. When you look at the sample code, and do look at sample code online, like not only from Apple, but also look at just search like in the resources section at the end, which I'll send you guys, there's a lot of sample code out there that I can link you guys to. In that stuff, you'll find a lot of times in this view controller, that view controller class that I talked about, they often shove in the data model as well. So then that sort of threw me for a loop when I first started programming, because it was like, okay, so we have this model view controller, which sounds like a great idea, but really what we have is a view, which is sort of this like interface builder, this like interface that you create by like, you know, drawing in rounded rectangles and stuff. And then you have this like view controller class, which is what I showed you in the code earlier. And that view controller class is just like full of data methods. It's like full of it's full of accessing data stuff. It's full of like these things which aren't just the controller. And so what you really want to do is think about how you can actually separate that out. Like if you're calling a SQL database, like let's say a SQL database that you stored of like dining hall stuff, right? If you're calling that SQL database repeatedly, you want to have that as its own class. It's like a utilities class. And that utilities class can then, like in your code, you can declare an instance of that utilities class. So you can literally do like, you know, if your utilities class is called like, if it's called, you know, data utilities, right? You can just do data utilities star to indicate it's a pointer, and then type in some name that you want to call this instance, or not instance, but this like pointer to the data utilities. And then you could run all the code, like all the methods that are in your data utility class, you can run from your view controller. So that's like actually a real way of how to subclass these like data things. Like, there's more. You should, again, come talk to me. It's like just about design and stuff, but in the beginning, you'll find that oftentimes it just starts, like, it seems like it's all put into one view controller. And you shouldn't necessarily worry about that, because in the beginning, it's nice to have everything all together in one. But as you start to build more complex code, let's say your data controller has like a lot of different methods for calling, like what type of food it is, how students have ranked it, how, when it's going to appear. As you start to have more and more functions in your data controller, then you don't want that all to be sitting in your view controller, because then it just starts like clogging up the whole thing. And when you're looking through like your function, when you're looking through your view controller, it just starts to become really cluttered. So the great thing is that separating these out beyond this like sort of elegant the simplicity, and it seems natural to separate these things out, is that it's actually supposed to save you code. Because what happens is that if you write a data controller and then you have like a view controller and a view, so these are three separate entities, but if, let's say, you wanted to just reskin your application completely, you hate the way it looks really dopey, you want to change the way it looks. So you then don't have to edit the data controller class at all, and all you have to do is look within your view controller and like edit the different lines of code that change the color, change like, you know, where things are labeled, etc. Because the only thing that interfaces with the data is that like one method call. See, it's like difficult talking code, right? Because like, I'm sort of doing things with my hand, but again, how are you going to do that in Xcode? All right, well, why don't we first go on to some vocabulary and terminology, and then I'll furthermore go deeper into the Rover program and just show you guys a bit more about this like calling subclasses and whatnot. Okay, so we can first just go through what these things mean. So a delegate, Jonathan put it nicely, but I also kind of think of it as like, so the app delegate is like this general like listener, I almost want to say. Like it is an instance, it is like an instance of this like UI application, but I always think of delegates as a general listener. So when you hear something like, when you see something, hear something in your code like UI web view delegate, that means it's a listener for something that happens within the web view. Okay, so then we can start looking at the tab bar controllers. So, sweet. Okay, so now if you're doing a data application, there are several ways that you want to organize your data application, right? And one of them that seems fairly natural is to do these tabs like Apple has. So these tabs are generally supposed to be for various functions of your application. So like, for example, the Apple Clock application, which they use as an example, it has like alarm clock, it has stopwatch, it has countdown. So these are generally like disparate apps within themselves, but they're related together, and they can actually, you can also have like data talk between them. They're not like completely segregated. They're just supposed to be like nice like for user interface to organize them. So that's called a UI tab bar controller. The UI navigation controller is something that's, it's just like, the best way to envision that is a stack of these views. So what I have here, like this rectangle that I'm drawing out with my hand, this is a view. And this is the top of a navigation controller. So the way to envision this is that these tabs are actually separate bins in which you have, each of these bins has a navigation controller. And what the navigation controller is, it's like a sheet of paper, right? Or sorry, it's a stack of paper. And each sheet of paper within that stack is a view. So the way you can think about the navigation controller, it's like right now I'm at one particular tab, so I'm in one particular bin, right? And then the navigation controller is now going to help me navigate within these particular tabs. So like I can click this, right? And they'll take me to a new leaf that's on top. So it literally what it does is that it pushes on a new navigation, a new view controller on top of this. And so the navigation controller is really responsible for like, you know, popping this one off. So if I click this, I pop off that navigation controller to the original one. So I take off that sheet of paper. And like the navigation controller is responsible for like it's literally controlling the movement between these view controllers. Whereas the tab view controller is like a separate bin in which, you know, you have these, each tab view controller has a navigation view controller. And one of the things to remember is that this tab view controller is the highest hierarchy, is at like the apex of the hierarchy on the Apple programming guide. Like if you're gonna use this as Apple gives you, like stock, that has to be like on every screen, that tab bar. And then you can do, like there are ways you can do of like, you know, hiding the tabs at the bottom, but just remember that it's like if you have these bins, it's gonna be like often at the highest level of your program. There are exceptions to that, but again, if you run into them, just we can chat. Okay, so now let's go back to, I guess the other couple of terms were like a view controller and also a view controller. So a view controller is something that's like that sheet of paper I was talking about. It's actually a view. So now I can just go back to this screen here. A view controller is literally just this like whatever's like content that you want to display. So within the view controller, an actual subclass of it is called the UI view controller. And the UI view controller is just a blank view that you can fill with anything you want. So you can add in buttons, you can add in like more navigate, you can add in like a search bar like I have here, or you can add in, for example, like a table view. So a table view is also another one of these. It's called, it's actually a view. So the view controller was like this container in which everything was kept. But then on top of that, you can actually put like a UI table view, which is what I have here. Like these, you know, the table right there. And then beyond that, you can also have like a UI web view, which is like, it's like a built-in little Safari within your application so that it can access web pages. Or it's actually, you can render rich text with it. So one of the problems with the Apple SDK that I've learned is that text, you can't, like if you have a text label, you can't make that like the things inside of it bold. This might have changed in 3.0, but I'm not sure. Like you can't make like individual words bold. You can't have rich text essentially. So a web view is sometimes a way to help you get around that. So you can have like a contents page that has a web view, and that you can have like, you can use CSS styling, you can use HTML in that to make your content richer. I think I had at the bottom is like UI table view controller that's a specific subclass of the UI view controller. So it already has a lot of these table view methods in there for you. I guess with the screen here, it's really difficult for me to actually program and like show you exactly what comes up, but I will try it anyways. So going back to that sample application that I had, stop all this. That's actually the debugger that comes up. Now a couple things just about Xcode itself, like little tricks and whatnot. If you look here, you can actually see. If you click, you see like, here's your coding window essentially, right? And if you click in here, you can actually see all of your different methods that are in your thing. So it's a quick way to jump to methods. Like you don't have to scroll endlessly through lines of code to get there. Also, there's autocomplete. So if I were to do something like, in here I want to do NS string, I can just, you know, hit that. If you want to show like what kind of things are available, you can just hit escape, and then it'll show you all the different options for, you know, the classes that you pull up with, starting with NSString. And it's actually very smart too, because like within a particular like, if you have created a custom class that only has a couple of methods in it, it'll actually know not to look within the whole space of possible like words that start with NS, or like it'll know not to look at if you call your like method foobar, right? That's like foobar is it'll look for foobar only within the method that you've created. So that's certainly a nice feature. Let's see, what are other cool things about the Xcode interface? As John said, you can do this. I think he said option and double click. So that pulls up, that goes into the, okay, so that was probably too fast. But what it really does is this equivalent of this thing. It says jump to definition, I believe. And so what that does is that view did load, remember, I subclassed it from something else. So if I want to jump to the definition, it's jumping to the definition in the parent class. So you can jump, you can take this and just go jump to definition. And now I've actually pulled up this class called UIViewController, right? So this is something that you usually never see. You never touch, actually, because this is built into Apple's default like package, the software development kit that they give you. So within here, you can see like all these things, like UIView and whatnot. But down there, I remember, what was it? I looked for view did load. So view did load is here. It just, that's sort of like where it's hiding, essentially, when you've subclassed it. And in here, you can also see a lot of the other methods as well. Like, they're all pretty intuitive. I forgot to tell you earlier that like Objective-C, one of the great things about Objective-C is that the method names are like almost super intuitive. And so when you see view did load, what does that mean? It's like what happens after the view has loaded, right? But then there's also view did appear. So that when it's after it's loaded, there's like a difference between when it's loaded and when it's actually going to appear on the screen, right? And then view will disappear, right? It's like these things are fairly intuitive, and Apple does a nice job of that. So going back now to the root view controller, again, all your for navigating Xcode, all your classes and stuff are sort of organized into the stuff on the side. So I wouldn't worry about too much of this stuff at the moment. These are just your classes, and you can do things like if you right-click this, open up, you can look at like errors, warnings, like whether your files are actually built into your program. So like target membership means that like when you run, again, C is a compile time. It's a compiled language, not an, what is it, like interpreted language, right? So you actually have to compile this, and that checkbox tells you that you want to include this file into your compile process. I know sometimes I've had these random bugs where I just didn't know what was going on, and it turned out one of these files wasn't compiling in there. So you just want to, these little things, like, you want to check before asking me. So, all right. Going back into this, let's like root view controller, right? Again, so these are methods that are, okay, so I had these methods here for like the view did load and stuff. But then like the table view, which a lot of you will use in your data stuff, the table view is, it also has really intuitive methods. So the table view, if you look at here, and the reason I'm going into table views, trust me, you guys will use the table view in your programs. So you can look at number of rows in section, right? So a number of sections in table view. So one good way to start experimenting with the code and figuring out what stuff does is just start to change these numbers, right? So I can change this to one, number of rows in section. So sections are like, if you ever use the contacts list in your iPhone, each of those letters of the alphabet is a section. And then number of rows in section is how many actual rows, how many contacts are within that particular section. So I can change it to like 4, right? And so now it doesn't say anything. Like UI cell for row at index path, what that means is that it's talking about what are you putting inside that cell at a particular index, essentially, within the table. Because like you have to have indices within your table to know that you want to label, you know, John Smith differently from like, you know, Jill Smith or something like that. So I think what you can do is like cell.text label equals. And whenever you have a string, you actually need to put an at in front of it. So like at foo. And again, close with a parenthesis. So I think that will display something in this table view. You can also say, did select row at index path. So this is really important because did select row at index path, what do you think that does? Did select row at a particular path. So that's what happens when you actually press on a particular row in the path or in this table view. So when you press on it, you obviously want to do something else. And Apple's nicely given you some like commented out sample code. It's like self.navigationController push view controller. So that pushes another view controller. Like let's say after the gym hours, you can have like, I don't know, some like map or something. You push it onto the next view. So and then you have other things like can edit row at index path. That's if you want to have like a little edit button in the corner, so you can press it, and then you can actually have a delete button that like allows you to edit whatnot. Right. So again, I'm just trying to tell you that these are like fairly intuitive method names. And now I get to the other part that's important is deallocate. So dealloc is the last part of this. It's usually at the bottom of every piece of code that you have. And what that does is, remember John was talking about you do that at property thing that's like non-atomic retain. I think I should actually show you what we do normally. Like you have in a couple places you have to do sort of these at property declarations. So within your so what I do here is that I first have this. You know, I'm declaring my variables here. So this is an NS string. It's called last query, right? So I declare it here. It's NS string is actually it's a pointer here, but it's actually NS string is in Apple's case, it's not just like a type definition like you might have used in C. It's like a whole class. So the nice thing is that within that NS string class, then you can like modify your you can have things to like concatenate things together. It's a bit complicated, but it's like a class that has its own variables. It's not just a string that you can like do if you use PHP, like I think like the dot just like concatenates it together. No, you have to actually use NS string, and then you have to do string by appending string, which is like a method that you call to add on another string. It's a bit clumsy, but you know, what can you do? So I declare this NS string here, but then in the next couple of lines, underneath this bracket for like the underneath this bracket for like the at interface, I also have to, you know, I have to do these getter and setter things that Jonathan was talking about. So the getter and setter, what that really does is that it tells it to declare an instance of this. It's like actually putting an instance of that in memory, and it's like makes functions that you can change it with. And so here I do non-atomic retain, and for each one of these non-atomic retain ones, you have to do something here. Now in your .m file, you have to look at it at the top. You have to do at synthesize, which is what actually builds it essentially within your dot, like your implementation file rather than your header file. And then again, for each one of those things that you retained, remember, it's going to stay in memory unless you tell it to release it. So you have to go to the bottom here, and I think, well, I'll just use this handy search thing, dealloc, right? And so I had, you know, these things that I declared, I just released them. And so releasing them is like, it's good practice to keep on releasing your things that you store in your memory, because otherwise you just, the iPhone has limited memory. It's a pretty powerful phone as far as like, you know, devices go, but it'll start to crash your program if you like have like the user using it for 5 minutes and stuff, and it'll just die on you. So again, those retained elements you have to release here. Other things that you like initialize, if you initialize them, remember to release them, because like initialize them by using an allocate command, you have to release them. So that's just again like C. Okay. So seriously, any questions at this point, like at all? Cool. Okay, so now there's this thing of interface builder. And this is one of the, remember how I said how you create a view? Creating a view is actually a bit tricky. So like doing an interface builder is actually this you create something called an XI, like a view file. Like all these views here were not just created in code. Right? If you, it would take forever for you to create something in code, and it would never look something as nice as what Apple already has. So thankfully, what Apple has created for you, or I mean, it's to the bane of some people, is that they have this sort of graphical interface that literally allows you to drag and drop elements into your, into this like sort of view. So Interface Builder is here, right? I can create a new view. And one important thing is for the view, for you guys to remember and to like write down too, is like never view it in this sort of like view mode. Always view it in list mode, because that allows you to see like the what things are being added as elements of others. So right now, like here's this view, and so that's just a blank view, but I can add things to it. Like if I open up the library, I can add in things like a button, right? I just literally, look at this. It's like dragging and dropping stuff. So I just drag it into here, and now within the view, you'll see there's a rounded rect button. So again, in this thing, if you were in this mode, you wouldn't be able to see that the rounded rectangular button had been added to this view. So again, you can do similar things with like, look at all this, all the options that you have. So I can drop another like search bar into here, right? So there we go. That's a search bar. Yeah, I'm really sorry about the screen real estate that's available here. But you kind of get the idea. So just because you dragged it in, though, doesn't mean that the back end is actually connected up. So here's where most people actually get tripped up. So I want to look at several things. So like, when you're connecting up the back end, you have to right-click this and look at these like now referenced outlets, right? And it's best actually now to look at the code that I had. It's just, you can just go to New Project in Apple and pull up the same code. It's best to look at the stuff that I had in Xcode of this like this controller. So all these interface builder files, you'll find that they're called rootviewcontroller.xib, mainviewwindow.xib. So the rootview controller, I can open it up. And you can see that there's a table view just sitting here, right? And the table view sitting here now corresponds to, if I look at root view controller, I can see that it's, remember, it's a subclass of UI table view controller. So how this is connected up is that you see that it says file owner. File owner is now the name of your class called root view controller, right? So make sure that that's the name of your class that you want this thing associated with. After that, you can right-click it, and you can see that these outlets, right, all have to be connected somewhere. So what outlets are is actually connecting up this view interface with the back end of your code. So this data source and delegate is just something that's inherent to table views that you have to connect up there. So have any of you guys actually started playing with this? No? Okay, well, why don't I actually save some of these problems for, like, there will be problems that you'll get, like, commonly encountered problems. Maybe I can save this for, like, another session or something like that. Like, maybe we can get together, like, when you're actually starting to work with your code. Because right now I'm sort of talking in things that you guys might have never experienced, or, like, who knows, you might just be really good and never have to experience all these bugs. So I'll save you the time here and wait for you guys actually to play with it before we have another session and can get together and... But anyways, like, you have to connect up, like, for example, if I didn't connect it up here, it just wouldn't display it, because when I display the window, it doesn't know what to look for. Like, the view is within, the view outlet is, like, when you run the program, right, and you run this view controller, it's a bin, right? And that bin is looking for something with a view. But if you're not connecting it up to some front end here, it'll never display it. So what you have to do is just do this drag and drop thing. Like, you see? You just take this, drag it, and you drag it to UI table view, and you just drop it, and it connects it. So I know some of you guys are like smiling, and this is really easy, but it just trips you up like none other, because it's like really, you don't really know what's going on. It's sort of like this black magic thing that you're just dragging and dropping and connecting it, and suddenly it appears, and that you can run it. But again, we'll have another session later for you guys all to figure this out. All right, so yeah, again, wacky thing of drag and drop connectors, you know. Okay. So the last thing is the debugger. I think I'll also save most of that for later. But basically what you can do is that every time you run your program, if you insert in breakpoints, so if I add an Xcode here, so let's say I'm going to run Rover, and I can actually go to the side of this panel here, and like the main screen is called gsearch, so that let's test if view did load actually runs when I'm gonna like when I'm about to load some view. So I can go to view did load here. I can put in a breakpoint. So I just click this like line number here and I put in a breakpoint there. And that breakpoint means that if the program hits that point, it's gonna stop. And when it stops there, the nice thing is that it actually sort of gives you a dump of all the variables and stuff that are in the code. So I'm just gonna try running Rover. You did load at line. I don't think that was actually it. But if I press search, it should. Wait, which one did I actually put the view to? Search view controller. That's odd. All right, so maybe we'll put it in a more illustrative place. Like, let's say, okay, so inside the search view controller, I'm going to have methods that tell me like what happens that when I did select a row at the index path. So I'm going to put it in inside here, right? So again, the breakpoints you can add in dynamically while you're actually running this program so that, for example, this program is running right now. I didn't have to recompile it. Now I put in search, and then I'm going to click something here, and I think it should stop. There we go. So it actually stopped. So you can see that it stopped inside did select blah, 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 right? Because that's exactly where what I did in order to make that stop. And then in here, you can like then use these buttons here, or you can actually open up the debugger window like in more, so you can like open up the debugger windows, this little icon here. You can open up the debugger window and you can do like continue or like you can, it's again, it's just a graphical version of GDB, which you might have used in your C programming. And furthermore, you can open up this like more like awesome debugger that actually shows you like within self, okay, like what kind of variable. So like my list content is like a list of all the data that I have. So it has like 897, you know, objects in it. And you can actually go through and look at like a lot of the variables and what are their values at that particular point. So it's like in an iPhone program where like everything is compiled, this allows you some sort of debugging ability that's just beyond printing out strings and stuff. Because I know that when I program C, a lot of times it's bad style, but you just like print out strings to check what's going on. But here it's like, where do you print out the string? Or also like if you print out the string, it's just so much work to set up like a label to like print out a string to, like that it's just not worth your effort. So a good way to do this is either you know, through this debugger, that now if I just keep on doing like step over, so I can like step down, you see like how I'm stepping down through each of these, and I can actually like now hover over this and see like filtered list content, like how many, you know, how many like elements are in here and such like that. And furthermore, one thing to mention is that if you do want to resort to printing out things, like there is a way to do it, and it's called NSLog. Like NSLog as in like logarithm. So it allows you to print out to the debugger of little bits of the code that, not bits of the code, but bits of like whatever you want really. But it's just not, if you can use a debugger, try to, because it actually stops there and you can identify where your error is at. Whereas if it's printing out the wrong value, you might never know where it is. So one of the things is, if you saw the debugger here, I was printing out all the elements of these deals that I was importing just to make sure that they were there. So that was done using this thing called NSLog. So those are two like debugging tools that you use. All right, so really that's about it for now. The resources that I had are similar to what Jonathan had, but I'd suggest a couple of specific things. If you're going to start, since most of you are doing data programs, read Apple's UI Table View Programming Guide. So that's a really important, if you just Google like Apple UI Table View Programming Guide, it should come up, because that really gives you the in-depth facts on like what kind of, you know how it's really boring to just to have something like a list that's like your contacts, it just like has a bolded name in the middle or something like that. You want something that has, you know, maybe like a little subtext underneath that's in light gray font that looks different. You want to have an image next to it. Like, for example, in the iTunes store, all those table cells look different. Well, this UI Table View Programming Guide is going to tell you how to customize a lot of things, and it's really good about that. These are two websites I found very helpful. This one's actually a little outdated for iPhone 3.0 development, so I'm assuming that the software development kit you guys are going to be using is iPhone 3.0, because the 2.2 is like sort of deprecated, and Apple's trying to push everyone towards 3.0. So that's a little outdated for 3.0 stuff, but still has some really good articles on how to use like SQL, connect SQL databases into your application and such. And I think that's going to be the most of the case. Like, you guys are probably going to end up using SQL because core data is the other sort of data element, sort of data hierarchy that Apple uses. And if you guys aren't familiar with that, it might be a bit tricky. It's supposed to be very powerful, but again, it could trip you up. If you already use SQL before for like CS Finance and stuff, I think it'll be a lot better. iPhone examples is exactly what it says it is. It gives you little snippets of code, like how do you declare something? How do you like implement a button? How do you do whatever that is helpful? And if you're stuck with a problem, I'd suggest just Googling any term or any problem you have using the correct vocabulary. Like, remember, if it's like the search bar that's not displaying correctly, Google UI search bar, iPhone, and then your problem. And that will usually pull up a lot of various, a lot of hits and forms, because the iPhone's becoming a very mature platform, and because of that, you'll find a lot of good resources online. So again, we'll send out all of these links and stuff, and this weekend I'll probably have a more coherent brain dump of like all the things that I've encountered, and use the forums. You know, use the CS50 bulletin boards. Like, once you're starting to, after this last, the Google Maps problem set, just start working on this, because it'll take you a bit of time. It's a bit of a learning curve, but really, that's why we're here, and like that's why we want to help you get a good program as fast as possible. So with that said, thank you very much, and questions. Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for reminding me. So I encourage you guys highly to go to the Apple seminar on Monday. And that's because this guy is actually legit, whereas I'm sort of like a CS50 noob and like I'm hacking this together. Like, he is an Apple like engineer from Toronto. He's coming in Boston specially to present to us, essentially. So I highly encourage you guys to watch his, like, go to his presentation. It's in Maxwell Dworkin, I believe it's 119. From 3 to 5 on Monday. So really, it's like not a, like usually these iPhone, if you look online for like iPhone development, like forums, like seminars and stuff, they'll cost like $1,000 because people want to break in this. So here's your chance to see an Apple engineer talk about it for free. Do it. Cool.